Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So today, of course,
we are
reading a very famous verse, prayer by Prahlad Maharaj.
At the glories of the process of devotional service.
And we would dedicate this class to that very important verse. Text 23 and 24 of the 5th chapter of the 7th canto. Sri Prahlada Vacha. Shravanam kirtanam vishnu smaranam pada sevanam achanam vandanam dasham sakyam atman nivedanam iti pumsha pita vishnu bhaktischenda valakshana kriyata bhagavatyada tanmanye ditam uttamam. Prahlad Maharaj said, hearing and chanting about the transcendental holy name, form, qualities, paraphernalia, and pastimes of Lord Vishnu, remembering them, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, offering the Lord respectful worship with 16 types of paraphernalia, offering prayers to the Lord, becoming his servant, considering the Lord one's best friend, and surrendering everything unto him, in other words, serving him with the body, mind, and words. These 9 processes are accepted as pure devotional service. One who has dedicated his life to the service of Krishna through these 9 methods should be understood to be the most learned person, for he has acquired complete knowledge. So, now, do you need an extension board?
Yeah, looking for that, but I just checked your battery. It's there for a couple
of
hours.
Yeah, it's full, so it should be okay.
Otherwise, we can use
that one, and then if I need it later, his should be charged.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, thanks. So, through this purport. There are report goes about 5 pages or so. Some of these sections we will read through, and then there are some, there's some nice quotes that we can look at in conjunction with the purport. When Prahlad Maharaj was asked by his father to say something from whatever he had learned, he considered that what he had learned from his spiritual master was the best of all teachings, whereas what he had learned about diplomacy from his material teachers, Sunda and Amaka, were useless. Bhakti parishandu bhavo virakti anyatra cha. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.42. This is the system of pure devotional service. A pure devotee is interested only in devotional service, not in material affairs. To execute devotional service, one should always engage in hearing and chanting about Krishna or Lord Vishnu. The process of temple worship is called archana. How to perform archana will be explained herein. One should have complete faith in the words of Krishna. That's right, yes. I'll see you in the morning. But can I call you back later? Oh, yeah. Go on. Yeah, what's it? Say that quickly. I'm giving class. That's why I can't really speak. Yeah, can you call me back after 5? Excellent. Thank you.
Just mute that. Sorry about that.
One should have complete faith in the words of Krishna, who says that he is the great well-wishing friend of everyone. Suryadam Sarvabhutanam. Bhagavad Gita 5.29. A devotee considers Krishna the only friend. This is called Sakyam. Pumsha Pita Vishnu. The words Pumsha means by all living entities. There are no distinctions permitting only a man or only a brahmana to offer devotional service to the Lord. Everyone can do so, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9.32, Striyo-vaishas-tatak-sudras-te-hiyanti-param-gatim. Although women, vaishas and sudras are considered less intelligent, they can also become devotees and return home back to Godhead. So, first of all, we're getting these important points in the purport, that what Prahlad Maharaj is presenting here is the process of pure devotional service. And you know, there's a very famous conversation by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with the Tattvavadis, the followers of Madhvacharya. And the Madhvacharya follow the principles of Varnashram along with the execution of devotional service as a ways of attaining liberation back to the spiritual world. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu differed that there is a higher goal than that, and that is that attaining pure love of God, being engaged in pure loving devotional service, is higher than the goal of following the principles of Vedic regulations in order, along with devotional service, to attain one's ultimate going back to the spiritual world. And that the ultimate activity therefore is not so much the Varnas Ram activities, but the nine processes of devotional service are the ultimate activities, and that by them one develops pure love of God, and that pure love of God is above all the Vedic rules and regulations and above the process of liberation. Dharma, Artha, Karma, Moksha. So, and then, of course, you know, Srila Prabhupada mentions that you know, one should have complete faith in the words of Krishna, that if one follows this process of just developing a very loving attitude towards Krishna, then he will be very friendly to us. And really, if the personality of Godhead is very friendly to us because we're trying to just be loving to him, then what else needs to be done? What other ritual needs to be performed? What other sacrifice needs to be performed? What other knowledge needs to be attained? So if we have faith in that, that if Krishna is friendly towards us, just like Prabhupada once described that in the Bhagavatam, if you can make Krishna once in your lifetime at least smile at you, your whole life is perfect. One time Krishna smiled, oh, that was nice what that devotee did. Your whole existence in the material world has become perfected. So it's that complete faith in Krishna's friendship. And how is that attained? You can just once chant his name with love and friendship, purely. And then you'll get Krishna's. He will give himself to you for it. So this is a process that Prahlad Maharaj is presenting. Very, very, very wonderful, very spiritual, very pure. And it is available to everyone. That is also being presented there. So, Prabhupada goes on to say that after performing sacrifices, sometimes a person engaged in fruitive activity customarily offers the results to Vishnu. But here it is said, Bhagavad-gita, one must directly offer everything to Vishnu. This is called sannyas, not merely nyasa. A tridandi sannyas carries three dandas, same, signifying. Okay, I'm a Lord, body, mind, words. All of these should be offered to Vishnu. And then one can begin devotional service. Fruitive workers first perform some pious activity, and then formally or officially offer the results to Vishnu. The real devotee, however, first offers his surrender to Krishna with his body, mind and words, and then uses his body, mind and words for the service of Krishna as Krishna desires. So in the first instance, one, the body, mind and words are being used for my own particular purposes in this world, attaining my goals through religious activities and Vedic rituals, and, you know, being a pious, you know, good person, and in the course of that, offering a little of the results of what I'm performing for my own purpose, offering a little of that to Krishna, which is officially required. Wasn't officially required, it may not get offered at all. So in other words, you know, if you can do a ceremony without having to offer Krishna anything, then they probably would do that as well. But officially, it must be there. But the devotee is not like that. They say, Krishna, my mind, body and words are yours. What do you want to have done? And then with my mind, body, words, let me just engage in that. There's a whole different way of approaching. And that is called, that is surrender. Now, so basically, bhakti begins from the end when one hears Krishna's message in the Gita and he explains that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We are his eternal devotees. We've forgotten that. We're in Maya. We're suffering. We can, again, Krishna will extend his hand to us in love, and we can accept that and offer ourselves also in friendship and love. And if we have faith in that, that Krishna is saying, surrender unto me, that faith, that Shraddha, is the seed of bhakti. It is the beginning of the process of pure devotional service. It begins at the end of the Bhagavad Gita. And then the Srimad Bhagavatam then teaches that science of bhakti from that point. So, you know, here we know that Shravanam Kirtanam ends with Atmanivedanam. But what we also have to understand is that literally bhakti begins with surrender. And that beginning of surrender is when we have faith in Krishna. Yes, you are the friend of all living entities. You're asking me to surrender and take up this process, that I will do. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur gives the following explanation in his Tatya. The word Shravana refers to giving oral reception to the holy name and descriptions of the Lord's form, qualities, entourage, and pastimes as explained in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and similar authorized scriptures. After orally receiving such messages, one should memorize these vibrations and repeat them. Kirtanam. Smaranam means trying to understand more and more about the Supreme Lord. It's an interesting understanding, comprehension of smaranam. So literally what we sometimes consider smaranam, he has included in kirtanam. You know, remembering and then repeating. Because you can't repeat if you've forgotten everything you heard. Smaranam is more a meditation. It's entering into it, which is more an understanding. It's literally really absorbing yourself into it, comprehending it, absorbing it, assimilating it within your consciousness and your activity. And Padasevana means engaging oneself in serving the lotus feet of the Lord according to the time and circumstances. Padasevana. So according to the time and circumstances. Archana means worshipping Lord. So just like, for instance, if we're carrying the Lord on procession and it starts to get too hot, bring out an umbrella. Circumstances. Archana means worshipping Lord Vishnu as one does in the temple, and Vandana means offering respectful obeisances, Vandana, prayers and obeisances. Manmana, so, you know, again, Vandanam, you know, we sometimes just say offering prayers, but if they're not respectful, or if one is not, you know, offering obeisances, those prayers may be impertinent, or, you know, have the wrong mood. So, manmana bhava madbhakto madhiji mam namaskaru. 1865. Vandanam means namaskaru, offering obeisances or offering prayers. Thinking oneself to be Nitya Krishna Das, everlasting, a servant of Krishna, is called Dasyam. And Sakyam means being a well-wisher of Krishna. Krishna wants everyone to surrender unto him because everyone is constitutionally his servant. Therefore, as a sincere friend of Krishna, one should preach this philosophy, requesting everyone to surrender unto Krishna. Atmanivedana means offering Krishna everything, including one's body, mind, intelligence, and whatever one may possess. One's sincere endeavor to perform these nine processes of devotional service is technically called bhakti. Bhakti. The word ada means directly. One should not be like the karmis who perform pious activities and then formally offer the results to Krishna. That is karma kanda. One should not aspire for the results of his pious activities, but should dedicate oneself fully and then act piously. In other words, one should act for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu, not for the satisfaction of his own senses. That is the meaning of the word ada directly. So sometimes, you know, as I've discussed previously, that some of the ceremonies, the samskaras and what have you that we do for the congregation or people who are not part of the congregation but just want the ritual or samskara, they're the same activities that are found in the Karmakanda, you know, sections of the Vedas. And therefore, more commonly, the comments that I've received is that most devotees, you know, until one day I end up at their home and they realise that I can chant Hare Krishna and, you know, read the old verse from the Gita, they really just see me doing some ceremonies and hair cutting in the courtyard, and they think that, you know, they always think, why are you doing these karma kind of things? And they tell me that. So, whereas, you know, for me, I might be mistaken, but I thought I was trying to help people understand the Gita and chant Hare Krishna and have a little faith there. But
generally preaching now for devotees teach yoga, devotees do different other activities, yeah, which are not directly devotee service, but that aim to get them to devotee,
yeah,
service.
That's right, yeah. So it's a similar thing, yeah.
Yeah. Probably many of them things are not Vedic.
Yes, but strangely enough, they may find it easier to accept someone doing yoga,
yeah,
as a way of preaching than doing a Vedic sacrifice as a way of preaching, because it's just too much like a karma kanda activity. Yeah. So, yeah. But, yeah, please. So, yeah. But... So, therefore, really, when you see a devotee, they may be doing a completely, what appears to be the same activities as karmis, as Durga worshippers, as Shiva worshippers, you know, what have you. But we have to be able to perceive whether that, you know, desire is there, that the main activity the devotee is doing is trying to help people to understand the message of the Gita and the process of devotional service. If that is their main goal and they are achieving that, gradually bringing people that way, it should never be accepted as karma kanda. Even though it appears very much like that. And at the same time, conversely, sometimes karma kandis are doing what appears to be kirtan and worship of Krishna, and it is completely karma kanda. Because the surrender is not there. It's something completely different. It is just part of the karma kanda ritual. And therefore, one of the offences, you know, the eighth offense. You know, was that, it is also an offense to consider the chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra to be one of the activities of the Karma Kanda, one of the ritualistic activities of Karma Kanda. So they actually include chanting Hare Krishna, and that's what some of the things that we do as part of the Karma Kanda. That's their offense, but we shouldn't commit that. And, you know, one of the things we also have to be careful of is that when we're connected with Karmakandis, who their tendency is to include the process of bhakti as their Karmakanda practices, we have to be very careful not to commit the offence of allowing that to happen, either by them or by us. So, you know, we have to be a little on guard that when we are presenting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra or the worship of Krishna, within other avenues are connected with karmis, non-devotees, that we don't encourage them or ourselves utilize the chanting of the holy name for their material purposes, what have you. You know, we're really always just chanting just for the, you know, the purpose of helping them to become attracted to the process of bhakti properly. You know, that is, so we're trying to divert them in that way. So that is always our goal. And you know, they can understand that. And what we teach them is that if you actually, as we started this session, that if you develop a friendly, loving attitude for the Supreme, and you're not asking him for anything, but he's pleased with you, he knows what you want. He'll award you what you want anyway. That's what we try to teach them. And I quite often tell the story when I do a jagat about the little old lady that sticks on her back, you know, the one where she prays to God, all the sticks have fallen off, and she prays, and God appears, and she says, "Can you please help me put the sticks back on my back?" So I like to tell that one, because, you know, I say, be careful what you're praying for, because, you know, just pray to please the Lord, everything will be done. And then, so that is it, you know. So, all right. So we're in the purport here, and we're up now, I think we're in the third paragraph, is it? Now the nine different processes enunciated there, so I'm reading from my computer, so I have to, the nine different processes enunciated by Prahlada Maharaj, who learned them from Narada Muni, may not all be required for the execution of devotional service. If a devotee performs only one of these nine without deviation, he can attain the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes it is found that when one performs one of the processes, other processes are mixed with it. That is not improper for a devotee. When a devotee executes any one of the nine processes, Navalakshana, this is sufficient. The other eight processes are included. Now let us discuss these nine different processes. So, you know, we're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. We're also chanting. We're also remembering, because we're trying to understand. We're also preaching by, you know, literally setting up a framework for the distribution systematically of the Srimad Bhagavatam and training preachers. So we're also preaching. We're also worshipping the deity. As I said to one of the devotees, I probably turned away. Was it Chandra Sikara? He came there without his dhoti last evening. And I suggested perhaps that. You know, we treat the Srimad Bhagavatam class in the same manner we treat worshiping the deities, because actually Swajaya or self-study, study of the Shastras, is part of the process of deity worship. Because in order to worship the deities, there are other things apart from the actual deity worship where you serve Vaishnavas, you serve Tulsi Devi, you look after guests and also you study, and these things make you fit to worship the deity. They make your life wholesome and purified. So what we're doing here is literally part of deity worship. They're making us qualified to go into the temple and worship the deity in a nice state of mind like that. So it's actually part of deity worship. It is said also, one who worships the Bhakti scriptures, Prabhupada mentions that person worships the deity in all intricacies with all paraphernalia. There's no difference. In the beginning of our study of Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that first cantos of the feet, and then we had the legs and the knees and the head. Where are we up to now? Somewhere around about the waist. So, we're actually worshipping the deity form of Krishna, who has a particular form. So, all the different... And surrender. We're surrendering to Krishna. We're trying to develop a friendship with Krishna. We're considering ourselves the eternal servant of Krishna. The aspects of the others, to some degree or another, are there in what we're doing. Although we are particularly concentrating on, one or two, other aspects are all there. But, if you just do one properly, you can go back to Godhead. I was speaking about that the other day in class. Shravana, hearing. How easy is that? If you can just hear, you spend this life and develop the ability to hear and go back to Godhead. You don't have to build a temple. You don't have to do anything. You just learn that ability to hear. Now, it sounds easy. Actually, in the course of my devotional life, I found it's the most difficult thing for the devotees to do. Because everyone wants to be the guru. So, hear the Srimad Bhagavatam from the devotees, everyone wants to, literally be always throwing their tuppence worth. They want to be heard. Everyone wants to be heard. So, hearing is not so easy. Everyone wants to be the one who's heard. That's a pride thing. Within hearing, there's a very submissive, receptive mood about it. Very amiable to hear what another devotee has to say about a particular topic. Not such an easy thing. So, hearing of the holy name of the Lord, Shravanam, is the beginning of devotional service. Although any one of the nine processes is sufficient, in chronological order, the hearing of the holy name of the Lord is the beginning. Indeed, it is essential. As enunciated by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaita Gapana Marjanam. By chanting the holy name of the Lord, one is cleansed of the material conception of life, which is due to the dirty modes of material nature. When the dirt is cleansed from the core of one's heart, one can realize the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ishvara Paramah Krishna Satchitananda Vigraha. Thus, by hearing the holy name of the Lord, one comes to the platform of understanding the personal form of the Lord. After realizing the Lord's form, one can realize the transcendental qualities of the Lord. And when one can understand his transcendental qualities, one can understand the Lord's associates. In this way, a devotee advances further and further toward complete understanding of the Lord as he awakens in realization of the Lord's holy name, transcendental form and qualities, his paraphernalia, and everything pertaining to him. Therefore, the chronological process is Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu. The same process of chronological understanding holds true in chanting and remembering. When the chanting of the holy name, form, qualities, and paraphernalia is heard from the mouth of the pure devotee, his hearing and chanting are very pleasing. Srila Sanatana Goswami has forbidden us to hear the chanting of an artificial devotee or non-devotee. Here, again, we see one of the difficulties in hearing. So then let's say that one decides, yes, I will hear, but, you know, what Gaur Kishore Das Babaji is saying, oh, that's too harsh. they come and see Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, you know, oh, please tell me about Krishna. Yes, I'll tell you about Krishna. You must surrender to him, give up your family, your home, your job, you stay here and you chant Hare Krishna with me and never go back on. Oh, no, I didn't really want to hear that. I think I will go and hear, you know, from another Babaji down the road who says I can engage in all sorts of nonsense and do what I please. So, you know, and Gaur Kishore Das Babaji would laugh because, you know, he was showing that sometimes what a devotee may speak, no one really wants to hear that. Just like, you know, is it the Marquis of Zetland? Can you make me a Brahmin? Oh, yes. Oh, very easy. Oh, what is that? No meat, no illicit sex, no gambling, no all impossible. All the so-called, you know, sadhus and saints who, you know, will let you indulge in either the subtle sense gratification of the mind, you know, seeking after, you know, adoration and distinction and, you know, position and, you know, or indulge in so many gross or subtle, you know, that sort of hearing people will do. To hear from someone who's going to actually just present the, you know, the teachings of Krishna straightforward, as palatably as possible, that is not very difficult. It makes the hearing process almost impossible. Here, Prabhupada says, you know, chanting and hearing from an artificial devotee or non-devotee. So, you know, there are different types of, you know, persons. There are non-devotees, not even devotees. Then there are those who are devotees, but it's a bit of a farce, a bit of a pretense. He said, don't hear from them. So, hearing from the text, just like, you know, we have that situation with Prabhupada, when he wanted to you know, he was considering taking sannyas according to the instruction of his spiritual master, appearing to him, you know, the pretext of dreams, urging him that this would be good for his preaching, it would help him. He went to one of the Gaudi Mat Chaitanya Mat. He didn't want to stay there and hear and chant amongst them, because they completely disregarded the prime instruction that the spiritual master had given them and Srila Prabhupada. And he considered that their hearing chanting was not sincerely dedicated to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the cause mission. It was actually dedicated to some personal goals of their own, which were different, which were not in line with Bhaktisiddhanta's very powerful, you know, preaching instructions. So Prabhupada actually wasn't interested, you know, to stay there and just, you know, hear and chant. That doesn't mean that Prabhupada's not interested in hearing and chanting, but he considered that there was something pretentious about what they were asking him to do. Even preaching, they would have allowed him to preach, but he didn't want to do that. There was something, you know, superficial. It wasn't properly connected with his spiritual master. So, but others were happy to hear that, because that's a lot easier than being sent overseas, you know, in their elderly years. As Prabhupada would have asked them to do, come with me overseas, we'll preach. They didn't want to hear what Prabhupada had to say. In fact, when Prabhupada gave his appearance day Vyasa Puja offering, it was very hard, very cutting, very strong, very critical about what they were doing, you know, neglecting, you know, the strong desire of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. They didn't want to hear that. Not so interested in hearing Srila Prabhupada in his strong preaching. Telling, giving the truth. This is what our spiritual master wanted, but you're doing this. Oh no, we're not interested in that sort of hearing. You see? So, you know, that's what makes the hearing process also. So hearing, you know, it's very easy, but it's a science, and it takes a pure heart to just hear and hear properly and hear from an authorized devotee. And to, and as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, you know, he describes at the top there, he says, the word Shravana refers to giving oral reception to the holy name and descriptions of the Lord's form, qualities, entourage, etc. Oral reception. Oral reception means you hear, but reception means you receive it. You know, it's a reception. I have taken it on board. That's called hearing. You know, it's like acceptance. Hearing, yes, you know, my ears heard, but I haven't accepted a word that you've said. I'm not interested, you know, I'm not taking it on board. But the vocabulary, you know, I registered that you're talking, and I know what you've said, but as far as receiving that, no. That, you know, so hearing is not just a mechanical process of the ear. Now, alright, so up to hearing. I did skip out a little bit about the Gopala Tapani Upanishad, but, you know, describing that bhakti is meant for Krishna. So, now, hearing from the text of Srimad Bhagavatam is considered the most important process of hearing. The Srimad Bhagavatam is full of transcendental chanting of the holy name, and therefore the chanting and hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam are transcendentally full of mellows. the transcendental holy name of the Lord may be heard and chanted according to the attraction of the devotee. One may chant the holy name of Lord Krishna, one may chant the holy name of Lord Rama or Nrsimha. Ramadi Motishu Kala Nimitishtam from Samhita. The Lord has innumerable forms and names, and devotees may meditate upon a particular form and chant the holy name according to his attraction. The best course is to hear of the holy name, form, and so on from a pure devotee of the same standard as oneself. In other words, one who is attached to Krishna should chant and hear from other pure devotees who are also attached to Lord Krishna. The same principle applies for devotees attracted by Lord Rama, Lord Nrsimha, and other forms of the Lord. Because Krishna is the ultimate form of the Lord, Krishna's true Bhagavan Swayam, it is best to hear about Lord Krishna's name, form, and pastime from a realized devotee who is particularly attracted by the form of Lord Krishna. In Srimad Bhagavatam, great devotees like Sukadeva Goswami have specifically described Lord Krishna's holy name, form, and qualities. Unless one hears about the holy name, form, and qualities of the Lord, one cannot clearly understand the other processes of devotional service. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends that one chant the holy name of Krishna. Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtan. If one is fortunate enough to hear from the mouth of realized devotees, he is very easily successful on the path of devotional service. Therefore, hearing the holy name, form, and qualities of the Lord is essential. So this is interesting. That hearing is very simple, and yet we're hearing that for many people, including devotees, it is a very difficult thing to actually hear the actual teachings of Krishna consciousness in an authorized way. That is almost impossible for some devotees. Now, yet, if one doesn't take up that process, it says that one cannot clearly understand the other processes of devotional service. So, you know, this is a big thing, isn't it, in ISKCON? That if we have a process where people can come along, they skip the generation of devotees that they should hear from, and they quickly prop themselves up to a position where they're speaking, we've got a problem, because according to this, that doesn't work. Is it? Because according to how things actually work in devotional service, one actually has to hear properly, and then by that hearing process one can understand the other processes of devotional service. So you know, again, I like to point out some of the differences that I see from when, you know, in the early days when this was being followed. So we used to actually follow this, what it says here, we understood it and followed it. What I see a lot now is that sometimes a very new devotee comes, they may have some, say, a little university education, catering, musical education, whatever. Very quickly put into a prominent service. Because they're in a prominent service, they become a prominent devotee. And a prominent devotee who associates with other prominent devotees, and because of that prominent position, they are then the person that speaking to others, and they've skipped the whole hearing process. So that's a very common thing these days. I've noticed a lot of those persons eventually have all sorts of problems and disappear out the back door. But in other words, we set them up for a fall if we do that. You know, devotees actually, at some stage, devotees who come to ISKCON have to come to the point where within their heart they have the ability to see a senior devotee and understand, I should hear from that person. And if they skip that process, we've got a problem. Because the actual, you know, from nearly 40 years experience, here it is written, but you can just look at that devotee and you can see that they do not understand the ways of devotional life. There's a problem. It usually manifests in very poor etiquette. You know, there's just, the ways of devotional service means that, you know, somehow or another, Krishna is allowing a service to be performed in conjunction with devotees who one must treat in a proper way that's very friendly attitude to Krishna. If one doesn't understand those ways, then that person is going to have all sorts of, disruptive, disturbing, sort of interactions with the devotees that they're working with. Which is, very dangerous for the temple, very, very disturbing for the, the peace of the temple, very disturbing for the leaders, and very disturbing for, it's in many cases it can become quite a big disruption, especially if you have a lot of devotees in that situation. You have a significant amount of people in significant positions who actually have not picked up the ways of devotional service, particularly manifest with their inability to interact with other devotees, it is very disruptive to the preaching movement. In the Gaudiya Math, the end result of the Gaudiya Math, as I said, we have to learn from history, is that everyone wanted to be the person that got heard from. Everyone listen to me. That was the ultimate situation at the end of the Gaudiya Math. And they had a complete inability to interact with each other. You know, at the end point, it was just chaos. The devotees, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta saw that. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta saw that he was giving instructions, but he understood that there was a reluctance to actually hear and accept. And he understood that because he had one mood of preaching, which meant, let's not become attached to temples, the marbles, the rooms, the facility, the position. Let us preach as humble servants, body, mind and words, and our life will be wonderful. But they weren't hearing that. They were actually thinking, we are attached. when you're gone, I know you're saying that, but when you're gone, I want this and I want that. He knew they weren't listening. He said to Prabhupada, there will be fire. And there was fire, see? So they actually weren't listening and he knew it. So, it comes back to that point again, that they were hearing but not accepting what he was saying. If they had have accepted what he said, if they had have heard and accepted, it means that in the Gaudiya Math, all those devotees who said, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta does not want us to fight over the facility and positions when he's gone. Let us not even consider, our own position and facility. Let us work cooperatively to preach Krishna consciousness. That means they would have heard and accepted what he said, but they didn't do that. It comes back to hearing, doesn't it? They just didn't hear and accept. They're listening. They wrote all these lectures down and everything. But hearing doesn't mean, I heard that, and I wrote it down. Hearing means you give reception, taken on board. That's the hard part. If we skip that, it must end in trouble, because a devotee, although they attain all sorts of different, apparently external, elevated situations, and mix with the hobnobs in this one, you know, the big fish, really, they don't understand the ways of devotional service, and that means that their personal goals will not allow them to interact properly with the pure process of pure devotional service in a cooperative spirit with other devotees, and that's what is stated here.
On one hand, it said that just one of the nine processes is enough to attain perfection in devotional life, and then on the other it says that without hearing, then you can't.
That's right.
The others are ineffective, so.
Yes, that's right. That one is enough, but you can't do any of them until you have first heard. So, she's making a good point. So, it's, that is an extremely important point, that, you know, therefore, amongst them, you know, you're correctly saying that hearing is essential. So you can do any one, but if you haven't heard, you won't do any. That's right. So it's a very, you know, is a crucial point in that purport. Yeah. So you heard well. Yeah. But you know, sometimes we read these purports and they're very simple statements, but we really don't quite get a grasp of the significance. You know, this is when we understand that Guru is, you know, the same as Krishna being there. If Prabhupada is writing something, you can be sure that Krishna is in this room saying this to us. If we're reading this like this, that unless one hears about the holy name, form and qualities of the Lord, one cannot clearly understand the other process of devotional service, you can take that Krishna just said that to me. You know, if Krishna has said it, there's monumental significance. You know, meditate upon it deeply, it has unlimited significance. And sometimes we just skim over these things. Therefore, you know, I have a tendency, as you may have noticed, to try and not skip over these things. We could go through this course a lot quicker, you know, get a few slokas under our belt and what have you. But I know that you may all get your certificate and awards and positions, but I probably wouldn't turn out one person who probably understands the Bhagavad Gita. I don't want that. I'd rather we actually, you know, stop and assimilate the immense significance. This is literally the heart of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's like the nine processes of devotional service. You know, I'm sure everyone's read it, but, you know, how much have you read it? How many months and years have you devoted to studying it and looking at the various, you know, meditating on it, because it's so important, it's the essence. And yet we can, you know, you can speak to most devotees, yeah, I've read that, yeah, it's in the Bhagavad Gita. And probably 80% of those devotees still haven't learned to hear properly from an authorised devotee. So what have they read?
I was just wondering, for the years to come, this the process of hearing will deteriorate, and this standard, you know, will go on. So what's the fix for that?
The fix for that is you and everyone in here, because I am confident that everyone here will, you know, rectify any mistakes of the past and improve the future. And that's why I've devoted my, you know, life to, you know, putting my effort into, you know, whatever little I've gleaned from my, you know, authorities, the devotees who have helped me to understand these things, knocked it into my thick head, then I'm trying to, you know, give that back. I don't want that to be lost in a big movement. You know, the problem is sometimes when things get bigger, important things get lost. When a community gets bigger, families get lost. Individuals get lost. So I have confidence that, you know, the next generation, because, you know, this system of Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava is counteracting problems which have entered ISKCON. What we're doing now is, the things have entered into ISKCON, and what we're doing here in this room is going to counteract it. We just have to keep doing what we're doing and understand the importance of it. You know, to properly take the time to really, you know, meditate and, you know, on the Srimad Bhagavatam, and then try and present that properly to others, give others the opportunity. If we do that, all the anomalies which have entered ISKCON, as I say, there are significant different things that have entered because the movement has expanded with a lot of new devotees untrained, that's a problem. And it will become a huge problem in the future, unless all of those devotees who are now flooding the ISKCON have, you know, immense opportunity to be properly trained by authorized devotees and properly hear what is our actual philosophy, and to learn by the example of devotees how to behave as devotees. Not that, you know, we teach them the philosophy, somehow they've, you know, externally know it, but their behaviour and consciousness is completely alien to what is going on in the Srimad Bhagavatam. We don't want that. We actually have to take, a devotee should come out of Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, you know, with values, integral values of Krishna consciousness, skills in dealing with devotees and devotional service, and the science of Krishna consciousness and the ability to present that according to time, place and circumstance. That's what we actually want to achieve. And if we just keep doing what we're doing here, that will counteract some of the knowledge. So I don't think it will decrease, I think it will increase, you know, the purity, as long as this hearing and chanting is done properly. But if we keep increasing the movement and we don't properly train devotees, we're just going to end up with a big problem. As Prabhupada said, you do that and it just implodes upon itself. Ramai Swami told me that. As Prabhupada said, you just expand the movement and you don't train devotees, and they're just thinking, you know, there's some external understanding of the philosophy, all collapses. Just a problem. So, if it can happen to, you know, very advanced devotees like Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, you know, they're actually quite advanced, then why wouldn't it happen to a bunch of neophytes who can't even hear anymore? You know, it's definitely, you know, it'll just be very disastrous. So, now, so here there's one verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.11. Verses describing the name, form, qualities of Ananta Deva, the unlimited Supreme Lord, are able to vanquish all the sinful reactions of the entire world. Therefore, even if such verses are improperly composed, devotees hear them, describe them, and accept them as bona fide and authorized. Here again, they hear them, they describe them, and accept them. So that word accept, it's not that they just hear and describe. Within it, there has to be a reception, you know, to actually accept that message. That's part of hearing. That's the difficult part of hearing. That's the part people, devotees, are leaving out.
So the devotees who do not accept that moon is higher than sun haven't gone through this process yet.
Well, there may be many things that they don't accept.
Yeah, one of those things is there are birds flying from planet to planet lifting elephants.
Well, I mean, admittedly, some of those things are very difficult to comprehend, aren't they? You know? I mean, admittedly, they're very, you know.
They may be difficult to comprehend, but if you accept
it. We generally don't start out our conversation with them. We you know, first go through the bhakti, you know, Bhagavad Gita. And there's a few things in there they've got to get over before they get to the, you know, the sun and the moon ones. But, yeah. So, that, you know, and this is why, again, the hearing process should be done from authorized devotees, because a devotee, they, in the parampara system, is like the mango. They take it from the mango tree and they gently pass it down. They don't just sort of chuck it down, lands on someone's head, you know, splats in their face. You know, they handle the Srimad Bhagavatam very, very carefully. You know, a devotee handles the Srimad Bhagavatam as if they're holding baby Krishna, or, you know, Krishna is speaking. You know, very, very carefully we're handling it. It's not haphazard. You know, we're dealing with Krishna, we're introducing someone to Krishna. So, for instance, you know, if I'm introducing Srimad Bhagavatam to someone, it's the same as introducing. I don't just, you know, grab Krishna by the hair, shove his face in your face and say, there you go, there's Krishna. You know, it's Krishna. You know, you see from a distance. When I know that, you know, I can approach carefully, you're not going to poke Krishna in the eye. Then, so the devotee who understands that Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna, they're the ones who should be approached, because they're going to understand that people may not see Bhagavatam and the philosophy is Krishna, so they're very careful. You know, just they do things in such a way that a devotee coming in contact with Krishna or the deity, just like the deity in the temple room. You know, it takes many years before we even let a devotee in the deity room. Because, you know, otherwise they'll go in there and they'll be, you know, grabbing things and, you know, putting their hands in their mouth and, you know, doing all sorts of things. So, Srimad Bhagavatam should be heard from authorized devotees. Deity worship is learned from authorized Brahmins, like that. So there is a responsibility here on the part of the hearer, and then we get the kirtana on the part of the person they're hearing from. And this is what I'm saying. It is very dangerous for someone who hasn't heard properly and doesn't quite realize the significance of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that they're dealing with Krishna, but is very proud to sit on the asana and wants to be seen as the, you know, guru for so many people. That's a very dangerous thing. Because, you know, their handling of Krishna may be inappropriate. So, without hearing properly, you know, they may present Srimad Bhagavatam in a way that's, you know, causes all sorts of problems, both for the hearer, the audience, and for themselves, and disturbing the Krishna. But unless they hear, you know, properly, then they cannot actually, they should not be, putting themselves in positions as authorized, you know, gurus. Very dangerous. But you know, so it's a good point what you're saying. We understand that, you know, there are many things about Krishna, practically everything, which is going to be difficult to understand in the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's not a person's fault. So a person is not at fault if from the platform that they are, they can't understand something about Srimad Bhagavatam. That's not an issue, that's not a fault. That's normal, that's to be understood. And by, you know, proper presentation of Krishna, then gradually their faith increases like that. But it's actually natural that so many things about the Srimad Bhagavatam they'll not be able to accept. That doesn't mean they're faithless, it just means they haven't come to that qualification. You know, following the line of Srila Prabhupada, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, our business is to help them as far as we can to become as qualified as much as they can, as quick as they can, till they're more qualified than us. You know, and Prabhupada says that the mark of the first class person is, you know, they want to make the fifth class man, the first class person. So is that same? Yeah. Okay. Fifth-class person likes to keep even a first-class person as a fifth-class person. So, kirtanam. In this connection, I'll just finish that. In this connection, Sridhar Swami has remarked that a pure devotee takes advantage of another pure devotee by trying to hear from him about the holy name, form, and qualities of the Lord. If there is no such opportunity, he alone chants and hears the Lord's holy name. So if there's, you know, that opportunity is not there, then he can do it by himself.
So all these points about Shravanam, does it also apply to Swadhyaya, studying scriptures? And between Shravanam and Swadhyaya, which is more considered more important?
Well, you know, Svajaya, that is, study of the scriptures, for self-improvement. And so we're hearing the scriptures from authorized, to study the scriptures means we're hearing them from authorized persons. We're hearing from Prabhupada, so we're hearing from the authorized, and we're discussing, asking questions. So there's hearing, chanting, remembering, trying to then understand and assimilate and practice. That's all part of Svajaya. Yeah. Is that what your question was?
No, I was basically saying, like, if somebody has more inclination to study than to hear.
Oh, yeah.
Is that...
Study.
Is there a difference?
No. Hearing. If you're reading Prabhupada's books, that's hearing. It is another way of hearing. You're hearing from Prabhupada. Prabhupada spoke this into a dictaphone. And. He even said, like, kirtanam, Prabhupada said, the clickety-clack of the typewriter, when they used to make that sound, that's kirtanam. The sound of the typewriter keys going click, 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 that's kirtanam. Because it's part of the process, Prabhupada's typing the glories of the holy name, and as you hear the sound of the click, 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 that typing sound is the sound of kirtan. What is it? He's typing the glories of the whole thing. There's no difference. See? So, reading and chanting, studying Prabhupada's books, is called the Brihat Mridanga. You know, it's kirtan beating on the big mridanga. It's kirtan, Book distribution is called Brihat Madanga. You know, Brihat Madanga is a big sound. But when you're reading, you know, oh, no, there's, you know, no sound. So why call reading Brihat Madanga? Because people are reading the glory. So reading is, you know, Prabhupada included reading his books, you know, because we're hearing from him, because his purports are there. It is part of the hearing and chanting process. So if you're reading Prabhupada's books, studying Prabhupada's books, that is hearing and chanting. And he also, reading Prabhupada's books, he considered not just hearing, but chanting. If you're reading Prabhupada's books, you're also chanting. He said to one devotee, he said, you know, you study my books, that is preaching. That's kirtanam. Otherwise, what will you preach if you don't read my books? So he, you know, he said that. So it's not just hearing, it's chanting. Within study of Srila Prabhupada's books, you know, you can, hearing, chanting, remembering, so many things are there, even when you read. So we're very fortunate that if we don't always have the opportunity, you know, by Lord Chaitanya's grace, by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, so this is the, you know, this is what Prabhupada understood from Bhakti Siddhanta. Write books. Take the marbles from the temples. You want to fight over it? Sell the temples, print some books, and distribute them all over the world. More important than temples is books. So, you know, it's a big statement, but that's what, you know, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta said, and that's what Prabhupada said. Prabhupada did both, but we always have to understand the books. This is the main activity for devotee, is helping, is to, you know, that people should read, study, and practice devotional service with the, you know, basis of Prabhupada's books. If you don't have Prabhupada's books and you have temples, you have a nightmare. And that's it. You have a building that will be the cause of unlimited fighting. And if you have Prabhupada's books and no temple, you have Vaikuntha. The main thing is to have Prabhupada's books. That is the essence of all their hearing and chanting. It is non-different. So, is that yeah.
Prabhu, if that's the case, how come other sampradayas, how do they go along? Because we, you know, we give emphasis for books, but other sampradaya is also going on. But they don't give so much emphasis for books. So they're also going on.
Yeah, it's going on. A little bit.
It's going on. You can't say.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to understand.
I think, you know, from the history that I've seen with ISKCON, coinciding with the history of, you know, the different temples and movements in India, is that literally the revival of Krishna consciousness through ISKCON has literally revived the other sampradayas as well. It has saved them. It has reinvigorated. You know, Prabhupada said, he went to the West to give Krishna consciousness, that if the Westerners took it up again, they would take it up in India. And that's exactly what happened. And the reason the sampradayas in India are now, you know, if they're flourishing, is because all the Western devotees and European devotees came back with this immense enthusiasm to dance and chant like madmen in the middle of the street, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Otherwise, it was just, you know, old men, like, you know, there was, you know, everything dwindling. All of a sudden, you've got, you know, these strong men and women, you know, dancing like madmen. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. This is our religion. Let's get it back quick before it disappears. Yes, now we're in it too. It, you know, and why is that? And why were those devotees doing that? On the strength of Prabhupada's books. They got a book somewhere. They read his books. And those books encourage them to, you know, hear and chant. and take up and understand what is, you know, devotional service. The books took the devotees to India to preach and enthuse them to preach, and then those preaching devotees invigorated the whole world, including India. And this is the significance of Prabhupada's books, is that if you want immediately, at any time, to immerse yourself in the purest transcendental process of hearing and chanting, you just open up any page of Prabhupada's books and you are right there. You need go no further than that. Available to everyone, anyone without qualification at any time. What in the past was almost inaccessible, Prabhupada, that process of pure hearing and chanting, you open up one of his pages and boom, off you go. And if a devotee just has that ability to hear means I'm looking, I'm listening, and I'm accepting. You know, wow, that's good. What is it? It's not. Yeah, okay. Some things we don't understand. Okay, I'll come back to that bit about the sun and the moon and the flying dinosaurs. But that's what I used to do. I read the books before I ever met a devotee. I read the Nectar Devotion and the Bhagavad Gita. And some parts I'm reading and I'm thinking, well, I'll come back to that. But, you know, it just literally went over the top of my head. But as I read Prabhupada's books, I remember that the parts that I understood were of such value that I understand that the wisdom was coming from such an exalted source that if I didn't understand it, I can't find fault that anyone who thinks like this, you know, you can't discredit them. That, you know, if someone is, you know, this is their knowledge, I can't see anything wrong with that person. You know, there's something that I can't understand. Okay, that's another issue. But for them to have said this, what an exalted person. How can I, you know, I'll come back to it. You know, it's like a little window to the spiritual world. So, kirtanam. The hearing of the holy name has been described above. Now let us try to understand the chanting of the holy name, which is the second item in the consecutive order. So Srila Prabhupada, he is, as Vidya Lakshmi was saying, there is a consecutive order. You can do any one, but as Prabhupada points out, from hearing, one will be able to chant. One may not necessarily hear and then immediately be able to do deity worship, what have you, but by hearing, one can, you know, chant. By hearing and chanting, gradually one can remember in the sense of understanding and meditating at that. So it is recommended that such chanting be performed very loudly. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada Muni says that without shame, he began travelling all over the world chanting the holy name of the Lord. Similarly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is advised. A devotee can very peacefully chant the holy name of the Lord by behaving more humbly than the grass, being tolerant like a tree, and offering respects to everyone without expecting honour from anyone else. Such qualifications make it easier to chant the holy name of the Lord. The process of transcendental chanting can be very easily performed by anyone, even if one is physically unfit, classified lower than others, devoid of material qualifications, or not at all elevated in terms of pious activities. All of those fit me. The chanting of the holy name is beneficial. An aristocratic birth, an advanced education, beautiful bodily features, wealth and similar results of pious activities are all unnecessary for advancement in spiritual life. For one can very easily advance simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord. It is understood from the authoritative source of Vedic literature that, especially in this age, Kali Yuga, people are generally short-lived, extremely bad in their habits, and inclined to accept methods of devotional service that are not bona fide. So again, we're talking about previously non-devotees, and what was it, artificial devotees. So here we get another reference, you know, that they're performing devotional service is not bona fide. Moreover, they're always disturbed by material conditions and they're mostly unfortunate. Under the circumstances, the performance of other processes such as jagya, dana, tapa and kriya, sacrifices, charity and so on, are not at all possible. Therefore, it is recommended. In this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the only means of deliverance is the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. There is no other way. There is no other way. There is no other way. Simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one advances perfectly in spiritual life. This is the best process for success in life. In other ages, the chanting of the holy name is equally powerful. But especially in this age, Kali Yuga, it is most powerful. Kirtanam eva Krishna sya mukta sangha param rajat. Simply by chanting the holy name of Krishna, one is liberated and returns home back to Godhead. Therefore, even if one is able to perform other processes of devotional service, one must adopt the chanting of the holy name as the principal method of advancing in spiritual life. Jagya Sankirtana Pareya Janti Hi Samesha. Those who are very sharp in their intelligence should adopt this process of chanting the holy names of the Lord. One should not, however, manufacture different types of chanting. One should adhere seriously to the chanting of the holy name as recommended in the scriptures, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So
when we hear that any of the nine processes of devotional service is as good as, is enough for getting back on back to God,
yeah.
But this sort of undermines that statement. It says chanting is the most important.
Yeah, not necessarily undermines, but...
Like one cannot go back just by deity worship.
Yeah, it's not undermining or contradicting the other statements. any of the processes is suitable.
Like Pada Sevanam, somebody can take a deity of Krishna and just massage Krishna's feet.
Yeah.
That's not enough.
Yeah, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has... you know, from the authorized scriptures, and of course his understanding, revealed to us that in Kali Yuga, the chanting of the holy names of the Lord is the main process of deliverance. So, you know, there are nine different processes of devotional service. It is correct to say that any one of them can take you back to Godhead.
In other ages, but in Kali Yuga, chanting is the primary, three times. Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
Well, each of the processes should be accompanied by the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mantra. So, for instance, a devotee may, you know, 90% of their active service during the day and the main service they do may be towards deity worship. You get some of those pujaris like Mayapur, you know, that's their whole life is a deity. They get up, they chant the 16 rounds, they may do more, but they chant the 16 rounds. And then the rest of the day is deity worship. The main thing they do is deity worship, but 16 good rounds, And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's statement is that without the 16 rounds, the other activities in devotional service would fall away. But if the 16 rounds are there, you know, the minimum, then you can take up one of the other processes of devotional service, you know, as the main activity of your life that you dedicate to, and you can attain perfection in that and go back to Godhead. But it must be supported, you know, the chanting. No one can perform devotional service without, you know, the basic principle of properly chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Then the other processes will not take place. They will not endure.
Right.
So, therefore, it's the main one. So, in other words, you know, we're not saying that every devotee must do deity worship in order for other activities. Or every devotee must, do some, meditation, whatever, you know, parasaiva. Every devotee must do kirtan without exception, you know, chanting the holy name. Without, so therefore it's the main one. It's essential. And it's, as is said here, it says, in other ages, the chanting of the holy name is equally powerful, but especially in this age, Kali Yuga, it is most powerful. So, you know, in Satya Yuga, the chanting of Hare Krishna is as powerful as it is in Kali Yuga. But, of all the nine processes of devotional service that we could do, the chanting of the holy name is the most powerful. And therefore it must be done. And therefore it's the main one.
And it's also said that if you only chant but don't read the books, then very soon you will stop chanting. So reading the books is as important as chanting. If you neglect reading the books, your chanting will not sustain.
Yes. Still, you know, some devotees struggle to, you know, study the books, but they may hear. But as much as they can, it's good. But the main point that, you know, here is that everyone must chant a minimum amount of prescribed rounds. That is the main thing we take from that. So, you know, we've got hearing. Without hearing, you don't even get to the point of chanting. If you've heard properly, then you think, oh, I'd better chant Hare Krishna. And then if you chant Hare Krishna along with any other services that you do, and some of those services may become your life and soul, deity worship, or, you know, this or that or the other, but it must be accompanied by the chanting of the holy name. Yeah.
Radhanath Maharaj once said that you can go back to Godhead if you're just doing sadhana, but you can't go back to God if you're just doing seva. So which meant was like, if you're not doing, if you're even chanting properly, then just doing seva will be probably, like you said, you just start thinking, why am I doing this? It becomes like a ritualistic activity, not like a service you do.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah. So, you know, amongst the nine, so, you know, there was... When Prabhupada presented some of his classes on this verse, there became some controversies in ISKCON, because devotees, you know, were saying, oh, Prabhupada said hearing is amazing, oh, Prabhupada said chanting, oh, Prabhupada said book distribution, you know, oh, Prabhupada said you can do any one, Prabhupada said no, you must do, you know, and what was happening was that devotees would put this big emphasis on, oh no, it's got to be this one, you know. And another devotee would say, but Prabhupada said, this is the essential one. Because you can see how they're sort of, oh, you can do any one. Oh no, you can't do any one, you must, you know, chant. So there was actually some squabbles, you know, people are giving classes and people didn't disagree with the speaker. You know, as you're saying that. Well, I read in Prabhupada, it was in Prabhupada's lecture, it was in his book. No, but Prabhupada said this here. So they actually had to write letters to Prabhupada, and, you know, Prabhupada had to write letters about this, you know, because it became a controversy. So, but, you know, the significant points are, is that Prabhupada is giving a consecutive order. So that's, you know, there. He's also saying you can do any one of them and go back to Godhead. But you won't do any if you don't hear first. See? So he's not contradicting each. You know, they're actually supporting factors that you've got to add together with a bit of common sense. Not that... And this is what happens. Is that without proper training, discussion, thought, as we're doing now, a devotee reads something and they hear one thing and they think, oh, that it contradicts this one, so now I'll follow that. And then they read something else and they say, oh, that contradicts both of them, so now I'll follow that. That ability to, you know, follow, just like, you know, the discussion where, you know, if one is offered bhashad, one must honour it immediately, you know. And then, but on a codicil, you can't eat grains. So, you know, oh, okay, so then, you know, you're giving me bhashad, I can't accept that, you know, as a codicil, you know. Or, you know, you give me a codicil bhashad, I must honour it immediately, let me eat it. You know, I can only follow one or the other. One I've got to reject and the other one, the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, no, you do them both. So you honour it by accepting it. Yes, put that aside for me. I'll have that tomorrow. You see? So it's like that. That, you know, now the danger is this. We all come to ISKCON with our own little desires to be lords of the universe and to get our way. And when we read something that fits in with our little, you know, schemes to take over the whole world, we tend to accept that. And therefore, if some other devotee has said something else, we just, that devotee don't know what they're talking about. So, it's very easy to do in Krishna consciousness to find, you know, a statement that sort of suits your little worldview and to utilize that to feel that on the authority of Prabhupada's books, you can even, as I said, disregard the hearing process from other devotees, even senior devotees. On the authority of Prabhupada's books. So if Prabhupada's saying, you know, we should hear properly in an authorised way, but on the authority of Prabhupada's books, you can find what you want to say, well, Prabhupada is saying this, that devotee is saying that, I'll no longer listen to that devotee. So, you know, it's very easy to misconstrue Srila Prabhupada's books for one's personal material ambitions in the name of devotional service. So many things go on in the name of devotional service. My favourite story about that is Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji. And that's, you know, one of the reasons I began so intently studying Srila Prabhupada's books was for this very reason, that I noticed that, you know, progressively over time, if devotees wanted to get their way in something, they found something in Prabhupada's books which substantiated what they wanted and quoted that. And because it came from Prabhupada's books, the mass of devotees would just immediately accept that all that's in Prabhupada's book. And that was the end of the statement. That was the end of it. I mean, I always read Prabhupada's, you know, in the first 9 months of being a devotee, I read all the Prabhupada's books that were there, available, I think up to 10-14 or something. The Srimad Bhagavatam. But, you know, I studied more. Because, you know, devotees were saying things, I'm thinking, well, that's not really, you know, like that. So, it was one of the things that, you know, I understood had to happen, was that there's a lot of misuse of Srila Prabhupada's books for unauthorized reasons. In the name of devotional service, which is really actually people acting, you know, under Maya. My favourite example of that is, you know, that concept is the example of Srila Gaurika and Srila Das Babaji, who said that, you know, he was in the bhajan sort of, or the dharmshala or something, and he had a room there, and he used to come out, there was a little basket hanging, people would put some foods, and he would go and cook, and then offer them to, you know, his lord, and then chant, and what have you. And one day he'd come out, because he was pretty much blind, and, you know, he was putting his hand up to the basket to get the foods, and there was a snake there, you know, so it was hanging on a rope sort of thing, and he had his cane, and one of the ladies come out, a few people come to see Babaji coming out, and, oh, Babaji, stop, there's a snake there, and, you know, and so, you know, he sort of waved his stick, and I think the snake, you know, just sort of crawled away and what have you. So then the lady said, you know, Babaji Maharaj, you know, you go into your room, I will get the food, I will take it, I will cook it, I will bring you something like that. Is that, Babaji, I only cook for myself, you know, for what I offer to, you know, my Lord, and so, you know, it is okay. No, Babaji, you go into your room, okay, you go into the room, I'll bring it. Maharaji, is it? So she just kept pushing. I will do. And then he got really angry. Maharaji, you know, you don't, you know, leave, you know, here immediately. I'll go and jump in the Ganges and commit suicide, stuff like that. He was very, you know, very angry. So, you know, when he got angry, everyone just sort of disappeared. Anyway, but, you know, after she had gone, he was saying, did you see that? Did you see what just happened? And they were going, the snake? No, not the snake. He said, you know, the influence of Maya Devi that in the guise of devotional service, Maya Devi was trying to prevent me from doing my service. In the name of serving, you know, doing devotional service, I will do this, save it like that. Maya Devi was actually preventing him from doing the service that he wanted to do, that he had to do in the proper way. And that's what happens, you know, is a similar thing, that when people misquote our philosophy, our teachings, to utilize the resources of the Sankirtan movement for their own purposes, which should actually be used for preaching, then in the name of devotional service, Maya Devi is preventing the Sankirtan movement from being properly enacted. Done through Srila Prabhupada's books. Now the danger is, and you know, that generally if someone quotes Srila Prabhupada's books, we accept, well, this is, you know, coming from Krishna. But what we learn from Gaurika Kishore Das Babaji, even if it comes from Prabhupada's books, it's not necessary. It can be Maya Devi misrepresenting the philosophy in a construed way for some ulterior motive that literally is an obstruction to the resources and energies that are always properly being most effectively utilized in the Sankirtan movement. So, as we see here, seeing things in their proper proportion. So, we a lot of emphasis on hearing, a lot of emphasis on chanting. Now, what we're seeing so far is that, therefore, when devotees come to this movement, we just don't just rush them through the process of devotional service. We actually have to help them to learn to hear properly from devotees in a respectful way that's pleasing to them. The philosophy that they're hearing is authorized and not being distorted. And that through that, one of the main things we try to get them to do is to take up the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra as they're hearing and chanting Prabhupada's books, which is a very powerful impetus, and to take up the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, continue hearing so that they learn how to chant properly with not concocting a method, an offensive way to chant, a proper way to chant, avoiding the 10 offences, following the regular principles, serving the holy name, like that. And if they do that, then their understanding of the ways of devotional life, interacting with devotees, interacting with the deities, interacting, giving classes, all the, many complicated issues within the life of devotional service, then they can enter into that properly. And if we don't teach them that proper method of hearing respectfully, not jumping over that, I can make buddies with the top and then just immediately jump up top and skip that whole hearing process. If they've done that, they're probably not chanting properly because it'd be Vaishnava apparat. And then what can you say about the whole very complicated, subtle, mysteries of devotional service and interacting with devotees who are following the ways of Krishna, inspired by the super soul and, the transcendental spiritual energy of Radharani? What are they going to understand? It just becomes a mess.
In general, in the ISKCON temples, the only hearing happens is the morning Srimad Bhagavatam class. In the olden days, Bhagavad Gita class used to happen, but many temples have done away with Bhagavad Gita class. So it's by and large for the new devotees, it's only 1 hour, half an hour of hearing in the morning.
Yeah, well, no, that's a fact. We used to have, we used to get up at about 3-ish. Myself, Anirudha, and a few others. We'd have all the rounds done by 6. Sometimes even before Mangalaji. But then we used to come into this room here, we used to do reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita, sing a few of the prayers from Bhaktivinoda, the course, read a whole chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and then go to, and maybe one of us would do a little 2-minute class, and then we go to class. We would read on the way out to Sankirtan, reaching from Preaching is the Essence, and books like that. In the middle of the day, we could stop and join together and read from Nectar Devotion. When we ate prasadam, one of my favourite services while devotees are eating, I used to read Krishna book, and I'd read a whole chapter while they had prasadam. And in the evening, come home, do the same thing, and read another chapter while we're having prasadam. And they'd all just listen. And not a lot of prajalpa. We, the devotees just sit there and just listen to the book and have prasadam. Very quiet little conversation. And then you know, in the evening we'd have a Bhagavad Gita class every single night, 7 days a week, every day of the year. And then in between that, we get our own extra reading as well. But that wasn't the only hearing we did. Actually, our hearing process was from the time we woke up, the time we went to bed, that the general mood of devotees was that when your senior devotees, who could be 6 months, 6 months of a year more than you, you know, when they gave you a bit of a opportunity to speak and say something, you sort of ventured in the conversation. When they gave you the nod, you just kept your mouth shut and just let them. They pretty much, you know, spoke most of the time. They had the discussions. You sort of just listened. We listened all day. And, you know, it was, you know, if you opened your mouth and said something and, you know, you couldn't, you didn't back it up with some shastric reference, or, you know, you said something foolish, you know, you were just shut down straight away. You know, it's very liberal these days. People can just, you know, literally take over the conversation for hours and the senior devotee just walk out and just, you know, leave the room. In those days, you know, you just kept silent and devotees talked. We heard, you know, it was a major part. I mean, basically, for myself, I'm a hippie. I've just come off the street. All of a sudden, I'm living in the temple. I don't know anything. Yeah, I mean, I've read the books and that, but I really don't know anything, and I knew it. So I just kept my mouth shut, because I knew that was the best policy. You know, what? At least I had that intelligence. Just keep watching, keep listening, and, you know, and every day they were doing things, I just didn't understand. You know, what are they doing in the deity room? They're cooking this and they're doing that. Prabhupada said this, you know, so many things, and, you know, I didn't know anything. So, you know, that was a part. So hearing is an integral part of our day from morning till night. Now we have our ritual hearing. You go to class, you hear, and you stop.
in very few temples, they have somebody reading some shastra, prasadam time.
Yeah.
But there's only a handful of temples.
Yeah.
Just 5 to 10 temples. But most of the other temples, there's no reading on prasadam time. It's all prajalpa.
Yeah. We prajalpa was just off the list. You know, it you either had to be chanting or hearing. Seriously. From the time you woke up, you had to be chanting or hearing. If you're just sitting there spacing out for 2 minutes, you'd get caught out and pulled up on it. There's none of this sitting around in the courtyard like for hours and hours and hours. If you did that for 2 minutes, it's like a devotee would walk up to you, "What the hell are you doing? Get out of my..." You know, it's like you actually had to be literally actively engaged in human chanting all day, every day. But you know, when I joined this movement, I gave up all sorts of intoxication of the most addictive types. And I immersed myself in hearing and chanting and prasadam. And I never suffered even one moment of withdrawals. You know, every type of intoxication you can imagine. One day I was doing it, next day nothing, and I never even missed it, because I just never stopped hearing and chanting. I didn't give my mind, and I never even noticed that. You know, I just kept thinking, you know, one day, maybe tomorrow, I'm going to have the heebie-jeebies or something. It just never happened. But if devotees, you know, you see these days, people have problems, they have drug problems, they have this problem and that. They come along, they do a little service, and then they just sort of have these big gaps before the next, you know, so they create a big problem. But actually, if you take up the process fully, that's called surrender. You know, that's what we're talking here from the very beginning. You know, you begin hearing, but if you actually surrender to hearing, Krishna says here, and you say, okay, I'm going to come to the temple, I'm going to hear and chant. That's my life now. There's so many other things my mind's telling me to do, but that's my life, that's my surrender. So from the very beginning, you're just hearing, you're a beginning person hearing, but you're still practicing full surrender to Krishna, because that's all you're doing. And therefore, you know, Atmanivedanam is there from the very beginning, if it's done properly. If it's not done properly, then you can't say that Atmanivedanam is part of it.
I think that many years back, they used to put a song, you know, taking a shower, morning breakfast. I don't know if you guys know. You know, Greg used to be in the morning, he used to put that. Correct.
Did he? What was it?
Evening, I remember.
He used to be in the morning.
Morning.
In the, you know, he used to put that song, you know, Hare Krishna Mantra. But I don't know, it stopped actually. They used to play, even sometimes in the evening also.
Evening,
the Saturday and Sunday feast, they used to play. At least
we used to wake up every morning to the sound of Shanai, the Mayapur Shanai, that would play. So nice. And then evening Shanai as well. And you know, Prabhupada chanting, you know, all day. Yeah, nice. But yeah. But it's very effective when, you know, done properly. Very effective when done properly. Now, on that point, Sankirtan, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says that Sankirtan, you know, another way to understand that is it means complete chanting and hearing. He says that if one does hearing and chanting incompletely, they don't get the full efficacy of the process of hearing and chanting, and therefore they lose faith in the hearing and chanting process. So he says it must be done completely. Hearing must be done properly and completely. Chanting must be done properly and completely. There Prabhupada would say, using the, you know, upper and lower lips, the tongue, saying the words properly, hearing, you know, like that, speaking in a way that you can hear, others can also audibly hear what you're saying, you know, attentively, without offences. If it's done completely, that is called Sankirtan, that is complete Kirtan, and that is very effective. But one who doesn't do that, they don't get the full effects of chanting, and therefore they begin to lose faith in the process of Shravan Kir. That's why people don't do it. See, you know, I have so much faith in hearing and chanting, as I said, because when I came to this movement, I was like a complete mess. I heard and chanted, and I gave myself fully to it, and it was like a miracle that I'll never forget. It just changed me from a person with no control of the mind and senses to a person who's just, you know, control the mind and senses with ease, doing the impossible, what people in this world can't do, and I'm not even finding it difficult. And all I'm doing is hearing chanting. And I understood, this is magic. This is like a miracle. You know, this stuff doesn't happen. So, you know, from the moment I experienced that, I understood it works, but you have to do it properly. What we've read a couple of these, and we can understand that, you know, there is a tendency in this movement, especially when you have a big growing temple, that really some of these basic building blocks of, you know, devotional service, we're not even realizing, let alone implementing. Hearing, every devotee must be able to hear properly, and then from that hearing they should be able to chant very nicely. Any questions, comments?
When we discussed about, you know, how this reading and hearing going on all the time, you know, you're mentioning about the early days and how devotees would, whenever they get, there is either some kind of reading going on or there's some kind of lecture going on. So basically, there's no pressure power or there's no talk outside of those books. Now when we're talking about you know, if from a new person's perspective, or even sometimes devotees, we like to talk about how we're feeling in our Krishna consciousness, or how we can possibly expand preaching, or sometimes just giving a little bit of break, you know, just to kind of, you know, sometimes so many things are going on in your mind, and then you want to just put it out there, just so that it just keeps rotating. So it's like this looks like a full program, and it sounds amazing, because then in the long run a devotee has that effect of transformation. But then if these things are not happening, like for example, if one is not able to put that, whatever is going on, he's not able to put out that, or if he doesn't get enough time between the devotees or other devotees, then would you say he would struggle? Or?
Well, look, one of the things that gradually filtered down into the movement was how Prabhupada continually heard and chanted throughout 24 hours of his day. That, you know, it would be very off-putting, as it was for some people to join there, that literally they join in this not even 2 minutes where they're not, you know, hearing and chanting. And a lot of our hearing and chanting was done, you know, with a book, you know, and you hear that, or a lecture. But also, you know, we listen to the devotees who are organizing our Sankirtan Day and, you know, things. But gradually, you know, the more we've had the great gift of Lilamrita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, we see that very expert way that Prabhupada was able to hear and chant 24 hours a day, but in a way that's very pleasing to anyone who came into contact with him. So there was not a, you know, Prabhupada throughout 24 hours a day, hearing, chanting, preaching. But, you know, so we gradually, through the Lilamrita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, we learnt that, you know, there's a very expert way that that can go on, as we said, which is not too daunting for new devotees. You know, so in some cases, you know, when Srila Prabhupada met with different persons who weren't really particularly interested in Krishna consciousness, you know, sometimes he talked about Calcutta, and you know, he's got all his teeth and his watch and, you know, different things like that. Didn't say, you know, much, but, you know, just very little in the course of that time. So we see that, you know, he reduced the intensity of hearing and chanting to a level that was conducive for the audience, because, you know, not everyone can just slot into that slot, you know, and that's one thing we've learnt in ISKCON. You can't just put everyone in a slot, in the same slot, you know. And so we learnt that through Prabhupada's lectures and his, you know, conversations. As this comes through, we picked up, okay, there's a more skillful way to do that. But what we also learnt is that one who has properly heard and chanted, they can also remember. See? So this is the other thing we got from Prabhupada, that while he was, you know, with someone and he's just having a chat about his teeth and everything like that, for not one moment, he's got, you know, he's got a whole movement he's organising, you know, and like, you know, you can understand as soon as, you know, that person's gone, he brings in the senior devotees and all the things he's been meditating upon. You know, we have to get these books out like that. It's all, you know, going on in his, you know, his spiritual master, you know, the movement, so many different things, you know. So when a devotee, in the beginning, you know, as we see here, you can't consecutively just sit there in the early days. You know, to tell you frankly, if I sat there for 5 minutes and devotees weren't there with books and, you know, reading and what have you, you know, your mind would go back to something, you know. So, because, you know, after some years of hearing and chanting, literally, the memories of your past life are gone. You have so much to think about Krishna and devotional service, and therefore, if you are in the company of, like, I used to go and visit my mother, you know, it wasn't, you know, I'd usually try and get her to buy something off me, a candle or a book, which she always did. And apart from that, is how's you know, Dad, how are you going, you know? How's your health? How's, you know, how's the grandkids, you know? Oh, the garden looks good, like that. But, you know, while I was there, then, you know, I'm thinking, okay, you know, we stop here, we'll, you know, get a couple of sales here, and, you know, maybe we've got a little bit more time, we might go a little further down the peninsula, get a few more sales, and we might go back to the tent. So, you know, all this is going, you know, how much time we're going to spend here. You know, when we get back to the temple, we've got Gaurardi who's giving class tonight. You know, they're going to have hot milk. You know, all this, you've just got all this Krishna consciousness swirling around because that's your life, you know. You literally recondition yourself. So you can actually just, although you're not, you know, intensely hearing and chanting, you've actually, by the process of hearing and chanting, when you stop hearing and chanting, you're just remembering everything you've been hearing and chanting about. But you can't do that artificially. You know, Prabhupada says remembering, which we haven't got to, but we will get to one of these days, it's for advanced devotees. You know, you tend to think of it, you know, remembering. Oh, yeah, I can remember a few things. The process of smaranam is actually a process for advanced devotees who have perfected the art of hearing and chanting. So, to answer your question there, that a devotee, you know, they're hearing, chanting, shravan, kirtan, smaranam, especially those, they're the raga marga for devotees, preachers, and who are following the path of spontaneous devotional service. They can't stop thinking of Krishna, you know, hearing, chanting, remembering, principally. And, you know, one who hears and chants, then they're always remembering Krishna. And the goal is to always remember Krishna, never forget him. And you get to that point by properly hearing and chanting. By hearing, you'll chant properly. By hearing and chanting properly, you can always remember Krishna. And you can't always remember Krishna until you get done that hearing and chanting. See? And what is happening, again, that we have devotees in ISKCON who are not properly hearing and chanting sufficiently, and literally their remembrance consists of their particular ambitions, you know, for elevation in position, facility, this, that, the other, respect, you know, whatever. You know, that's the sort of scheming that goes on, you know, in the minds of those whose just minds are not just filled with, you know, what does Krishna want me to do for him now? If that's not there, if someone is not thinking intensely, what service can I do for Krishna now to be pleasing for Krishna, Prabhupada, my guru, the Vaishnavas, I'm in the associated Vaishnavas, what can I do to please all the Vaishnavas that I'm associating with? If one is not thinking like that, it'll be, what can I do that's, you know, sorts out my, you know, particular agenda in this association? That's got to be there. It's either one or the other, because, you know, there's Maya, there's Krishna. remembrance means always remember, I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. You're in the association of devotees, it is how can I serve the devotees, how can I please the devotees, like that. How can I please Krishna? One who's not practicing hearing chanting cannot do that. They will forget that and come back to the sense of, you know, not Krishna service, not Vaishnava service, or Guru service, but, you know, Godas. service of the mind and the senses. So that's remembering. Yeah. So, you know, a good preacher, Shravan Kirtan Smaran, they're fixed up in that, then they're a good preacher. Not just Shravan Kirtan, not just Kirtanam, they're hearing, chanting very nicely, and Smaranam makes them very, so they can let a person talk for hours. I sit in the porch with my mother. You know, she talks for hours, you know. But it's important to her. And, you know, out of all my relatives, my mother, she's done so much that has allowed me to do so much devotional service. Just the different things that she's done. And, you know, so I can see that, one, I feel that I'm practicing the Gita because specifically by looking after my mother, it has literally been a foundation of my ability to have time to serve Krishna. So I'll sit there because, you know, part of it, I'll sit there for hours and we'll talk about all the different things in the world, you know, from, you know, going to everything. But I have to sit there and, you know, just be thinking of Krishna. I can't just sit there and say, yeah, I'll sit with you, but you're going to have to sit there and listen to Krishna book. 4 chapters. And then I'm going to chant the Brahma Samhita. And I've got to practice my slokas. So remember. So does that answer your question? Yeah, must be there.
So it's not the book on the same way, sorry. Like, in the network devotion, we say that the 6 exchanges between devotees, that you ask about the other person's welfare. So that is not exactly Padarpa. It can go into Padarpa, but the devotee association, that is a healthy exchange.
Yeah.
But it can go into Padarpa, but that is part of devotional service. The 6 exchanges that. Problems and all that, or even exchanging.
That's right. You know, it's a very good point that Nimala Krishna is making. You know that, be careful what we put in the, you know, tin of, you know, labeled pajalpa, because some of it, you know, is Krishna consciousness. But again, you know, this is where by association with mature devotees, we get, you know, an understanding of what's where we get into Pajalpa and where we don't. You know, there's a training, you know, we in the beginning we can't quite distinguish. It's very hard, the younger we are in devotional service, the more difficult it is to distinguish between where Maya is there and where Krishna consciousness is there, they're very blurred. The more senior devotee is, it's crystal clear. Hare Krishna. Beautiful. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Very nice. Where are they from?
From the temple.
In the temple room. Gee, you're so kind to bring that in here for us. Is that Radharani's mercy? Because that's what we're all wanting. No, the Vallabha Gaurus. Vallabha Gaurasundar said to me at the beginning of the class, because he had to sweep up the flowers because, you know, and ask the ladies to go out so we could have class, and he said, I'm worried now that I'm not going to get Radharani's mercy. Is that Radharani's mercy? Is that Radharani's mercy? Thanks. So, Vallabha Gaurasundar, I told you that Radharani would give you her mercy. And she did. There you go. And he was worried about it. And you know why? Because we read in the beginning here that if we just, you know, accept Krishna as our friend, Radharani as our friend, and we just talk about them in a loving way, there's nothing further to be done. Our lives are completely perfect and they will give us our full mercy, their full mercy. Very simple, very simple. No one has to attain, you know, do immense projects or, you know, become famous or, you know, you don't have to have a billion slokas under your belt. You don't have to, you know, be a scholar, a Sanskrit pundit. You don't have to be expert in the art of anything. If you can just sit and listen and speak in a very, you know, just sincere way about Radha and Krishna from the Srimad Bhagavatam, everything that you need to do in life is completely, that is called sankirtan. That means, you know, the hearing and chanting is complete. It is sufficient in itself and it will take you back to God. And that's exactly what we've done. And Radharani is just, who is, you know, not appeared in the, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is just confirmed to everyone. That is all that's required. You know, Krishna's come in with his friendship. Isn't it? You know, Krishna's walked in, Krishna sent her in with a flower, and when you smell that flower, it means Krishna is saying, I want you all to take this blessing. I'm happy with you. So, we got two done, but two very important ones. Almost three. Let us take up this purport next week. Now, just in general, there are discussions about assessment and all that going on somewhere, and you know, when that all gets finalised, and you know, we'll look into that. But in the meantime, you know, we'll just keep hearing and chanting, and then we got to get to an end of 10 chapters, you know, before we really need to do anything anyway, and so you know, don't bother too much. But you know, one interesting thing that I was thinking of was that, you know, in discussion with Atul Krishna, that just to, you know, reaffirm, basically, at the end of Bhaktivedanta, we need to do 100 slokas from Srimad Bhagavatam, means any of the 12 cantos. So anyone who's a little worried that they didn't quite do as well as they wanted to do, you've got about 8 or 9 years to study 100 slokas, and if you get them done then well and done, good. And 200 questions, that's about 10 closed book exams. Assessed on 5 1-hour Srimad Bhagavatam classes somewhere, you know, as we go through. It appears that we may do one essay per every 3 or 4 months, you know. I mean, you know, still. And a 10,000 word essay, which is about 30 pages, so it's like a thesis. But we'll practice that with one essay minimum. We may do more. There's a bit of discussion going on, but we'll get to that. And one thing I suggested to Atul Krishna, which he liked the idea because we're doing the thesis, was that when I studied the 10th canto while I was on the farm, looking after the cows and kangaroos, was that I broke it up into about a dozen themes. Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. You know, Krishna, you know, his shaktis, the dance, you know, Jagannath pastimes, you know, like that. Different, you know, significant things. And I suggested to him that what I'd like to do is, with the 10th canto, is present to study it in that thematic approach, because I'd already broken it up like that and divided everything like that. And he said that that would be, you know, good. He thought that that would really help the students in coming to the point where they'd end up with a thesis at the end. So, especially for the 10th canto, that's one of the things which, you know, I'd like to do. You know, it's one of the things that is supposed to be done in Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, but they don't always get to it. In other words, you're supposed to study it and then go back and do a thematic approach, but it doesn't always happen. But I'd like to do that at least for the 10th canto. But anyway, that's all being sorted out, but try not to worry too much. I'm not. Let's, you know, keep hearing and chanting. We've got to get up to the 10th canto before we finish this unit. And somewhere over the next month or so, we'll understand very clearly, you know, what the assessment criteria will be. And then, you know, it will be a lot stricter than what we've done in the past. But, you know, I'd like to thank all the devotees, you know, who you know, joined in on that sort of pioneering adventure, you know, where with just, you know, basically the minimum requirements somehow or another and the maximum obstructions, we somehow or another managed to get through the Bhakti Vaibhava. It was a pioneering experiment. We learnt a lot. And, you know, I want to offer, you know, my appreciation to the, you know, the quality of the devotees that have, you know, come through the Bhakti Vaibhava, you know, because from what I see that, you know, the students, they have a very... I very much value the association of the students because I see, you know, nice Vaishnava qualities, you know, that you're not just trying to become pundits or scholars. I see that, you know, the students are actually trying to, you know, interact nicely with other devotees, avoid offences, treat Krishna respectfully, treat the Srimad Bhagavatam respectfully, treat senior devotees respectfully. And therefore, I feel that you've actually learned what should have been learned from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And, you know, I think that I'm looking forward to the, you know, gradually they're going to develop a college and what have you. And I really hope that the caliber of, you know, some of the students have gone through, you know, this Bhakti Vaibhava will be an integral part of... you know, the college in the future, because, you know, you want, we don't want a situation where people get certificates or even become teachers and their behaviour of and their ability to understand, you know, the various services and interactions are not there. That they've got a certificate, they've got a good memory, they've got some scholarship, they're good at exams, but they actually really just not on the platform of a Vaishnava. I mean, that's what you want. When a devotee comes out of Bhakti Shastri, you want a Vaishnava of a particular level to come out. Not someone with a good memory or a scholar, a pundit. When someone comes out of Bhakti Vaibhava, you want that Vaishnava to increase to that stage of etiquette. Good qualities, good behaviour, you know, pure consciousness, like that. And... you know, I thank the devotees for, you know, I believe that you have done that. And you know, I appreciate that in all the students. I know that there were some things that we didn't quite get to do because of time and different things like that. But, you know, we will catch up as we, you know, do the Bhaktivedanta. And the more there's a structure within the temple... then the more that will help us, that we don't have to go through the difficulties, you know, that we have in the past. One thing I mentioned, you know, to Anirudha Prabhu was that, you know, I would have liked that there, such as the brahmacharis and some of the devotees, you know, there are some devotees here, this is their class time, and they're not allocated class time. You know, there's some devotees, literally, class, you know, it's just not an option. No, you can't go to class, whether I had an exam or whatever. It just wouldn't be an option. Actually, the temple should facilitate that if devotees, you know, and you know, whether they're men or women, if they're, you know, within a class, the temple should facilitate for them to actually have time to go to class, do the assessment, to study. You know, so that is what I'm hoping... that will certainly enhance what we can get out of the time that we have together. But, you know, there's a lot of anomalies that we've had to endure which have really handicapped both the student and the teacher. I'm hoping that as the college, you know, progresses, that these issues, if, you know, people are willing to listen, may be addressed. Anyway, let's, you know, move on from here. As Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, forget the past that sleeps in the future, not dwell at all, but bear with times that are with you now, and progress you shall call. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.